It's that time of the week we check in with Flo Tess. But before we welcome her in our traditional manner, we have a little something for your listening pleasure. Folks, harkening back to my DJ days, this is from a CD called Seasons.
April in Paris, chestnuts in blossom.
KR, we welcome you in. How are you?
I'm great, Steve. Thank you so much for playing that. Nice little throwback there.
That is so good. April in Paris, originally written for Broadway, made famous in the 1950s by Count Basie. I got to ask, by the way, Kristen put out a CD. How old were you, and what was the inspiration for this project?
Yeah, you know, I was actually 16 years old. It was my senior year of high school. So I've been singing jazz really my entire life. My dad likes to play jazz guitar. It's one of his hobbies. So growing up, whenever I'd fall asleep when I was a little kid, I'd always listen to him just play phenomenal songs on his guitar. And so it was something that was always really ingrained in me. And it's just something that I've always been doing. I used to attend the Stanford Jazz Workshop every summer and then sing in some of their programs they had during the school year as well. And my singing instructor, my vocal instructor, Wendy McCain, she's the one that produced that CD for me. It's kind of whenever she has a senior in high school, that's kind of what she does. And, you know, I've been with her since I was in sixth grade. So I've known her forever. And it was, it was a senior project. And it was really cool. You know, her husband, Stuart McCain, he plays bass on the CD. Just got a bunch of guys together that are way too talented of musicians to be singing, to be playing along a 16-year-old girl. But it was a really, really fun project, kind of like a passion project. And yeah, I mean, it's always something that I'm going to look back and remember fondly. And now whenever there's a open mic night, you might see me out there because it's definitely something that I still love to do.
Well, we were just bowled over. I'm curious. You had you on vocals, a three-piece band behind you, 8 tracks on the CD. So you talk about this as a project. The first thing I think of is, you know, some 8-year-old building a volcano. how long, what kind of process is this to, you know, lay down the tracks and 8 different songs and different takes? How long did it take for you to record the CD?
Yeah, you know, it actually took a while because the first thing came as to what tracks I was going to record. And I was, you know, it was funny. We ended up naming it Seasons because so many of the songs are there on April's of Paris, Waters of March. You know, it just kind of, they all yep. happen to be about different times of the year. And so that's where the album title came from. But it was in, September of that year when we first discussed what songs I wanted to go through. And then we started to make different arrangements because all of them have, you know, the best thing about jazz is that each arrangement is your own. And there's different riffs. And, you know, I start improvising on a lot of them, usually stuck in choruses when I'm just kind of starting whatever kind of comes into my mind. And that was the coolest part is over Martin Luther King weekend, my senior year of high school, we went into a recording studio in San Jose, and we spent probably 12 hours in there just going through and going through all the tracks. And it was really cool to have, you know, each band member was in their own little studio, and then I was in my own studio overlooking everyone. And then for some other vocals, my vocal instructor, like I said, Wendy McCain, she and Stuart have a recording studio in their house in Palo Alto. So I probably spent 2 more weekends in there going over, redoing some vocal tracks, things like that. And then about 3 months later, March, April, something like that, it finally came out. So that was a really, really fun project.
It's awesome. I'm really happy for you. We really enjoyed it. But from what I understand, this is kind of a sports show. So let's move in that direction. You're with the men's team. So we got 5 straight blowouts. More of a stern test last night. The odd finish, the flop by Brooks, but a big win. So let's talk about what you heard in the post game. Dana Altman, as demanding as he is, you know, pleased with the effort and the win?
At this point, this was, I'm not going to call it a trap game because it's not a trap game, but Dana had really emphasized with players going in that Utah was looking for a signature win. And at home at the Huntsman Center against you know, number 10 Oregon, that could have been a signature win. Oregon did a great job of staving them off at the end. I mean, I think they went on a 52 run at some point kind of early on, but kind of midway through the second half that really extended Oregon. But, you know, Utah had a really, really strong finish, and it started getting down to the wire then. But, you know, Dana has to be happy because he always preaches defense, and it was defense that was able to let Oregon keep the Utes at bay at the end there. But, I mean, once again, you just kind of saw every guy on the court step up. Great to see Dylan Brooks out there, even if he did have probably the most theatrical flop I've ever seen in my entire life. Oscars are coming up. I think he's sad he didn't get in on the nomination. But, you know, it was good to see him out there. I honestly think if it had been Colorado, even though Oregon, you know, hasn't won at Colorado, I think we would have saw Dylan sit out that game. You know, I don't know what's going to happen when they play the Buffs. But, you know, I think it was kind of set the tone for the fact that he was needed going up against Utah. Really tough team. But, again, I think this is just, you know, it proves that Oregon is their kind of main theme the entire season is they've been able to find ways to win games. And once again, they were able to do that in Salt Lake.
We continue with the millennial Ella Fitzgerald, Kristen Rogers, on the line. Colorado tomorrow, that's always a tough place for them to play. But actually, I want to get to the women quickly. Back-to-back games against this powerhouse Beaver team. You know, there was a point where Oregon was 0-3 in league and about to lose at Cal when Ionescu hit the buzzer beater. Sabrina told me her thumb is about 95% healed. KEZI, your site, had the press session with Coach Graves. How's he feeling about facing Oregon State, and where his team's at now?
Yeah, I do want to take a look at this a little bit broader, because I think what's really cool about this matchup is that both coaches have such respect for each other's players. I mean, Kelly Graves just cannot stop talking about how much he loves the way that Sydney Weiss plays. And then on the other side, Scott Ruick talks about how this team is ready for that young talent, because that's exactly what Oregon is right now. They have some really, really good young talent. And, you know, I think it's going to be a good matchup. Obviously, Oregon State is favored going into this game. But, you know, Kelly Graves has really prepared his team well. You know, looks like they're going to have three starters going up. And they know it's a challenge. I mean, Kelly Graves has played against this Oregon State team, even if they did have a few players, you know, graduate this past year, but it's going to be a really, really great matchup, and should be some fun entertainment later tonight.
Now, hopefully next week we'll be talking about recruiting and not another mess with the Oregon football program. But I actually want to get to golf and tennis because I know it's near and dear to both of us. Tiger struggled yesterday, and then even though he shot par today at a course he loves, Torrey Pines, you know, not even close, couldn't get anything going. And I get he hadn't competed in a real PGA event in more than 500 days, but you've watched him. I've watched him. Does he even look like he's close? It doesn't seem like the same swing or approach, or am I jumping to conclusions and we need a little more time and some more rounds?
Oh, no, that's exactly what I was going to say. When you look at his swing, there is something missing there. I mean, I don't know if it's rust or what, but just his approach to the ball looks a little different. I mean, he doesn't look like the Tiger that we saw, you know, even like 5, 6, 7 years ago. I mean, it's so funny to think how long he's been out for a bit.
Yep.
But he doesn't look like the same Tiger. And he looked like he was, like his walk, just, you know, going from his tee shot to, you know, his second shot, it looked a little off. So I think he's just trying to shake off some rust still. But, I mean, he is supposed to play, what, 4 tournaments in the next 5 weeks, something like that?
Yep.
Whether or not that happens, we'll see.
I saw on Twitter you were talking about the women's final, all Williams again. And, you know, I always joke that I worship at the altar of Serena. But you told a funny story, and the fact that we're having this conversation when you're a grown-up, that you remember the first time you saw Serena and Venus square off.
Oh, yeah, it was 1998. Second round, it was in the Australian Open. It was on Rod Laver Court, which is just phenomenal that they're going to play there again tonight. But, yeah, Venus won in straight sets over Serena. And like I said, it was a second round matchup. Obviously, Serena has their past. She's 16-11 in terms of their head-on matches. But I am so thrilled to see this. I mean, yes, Serena is favored. But Venus is her least favorite opponent.
I mean, yep.
There is no one in this world that knows Serena's game better than Venus. And the psychological matchup that you have when you have two sisters who have played together at the height of the sport for this long, I mean, it's unreal to see. And the thing that I think is really surprising is that Serena has yet to drop a set so far this in the Australian Open. I mean, she's been cruising. She hasn't had that big of a struggle yet. However, Venus had a really, really tough match against Coco Vandeweghe. And I liked the play that Venus, the way Venus played. You know, she was playing kind of free. Her stroke was looking good. She was volleying really well. And I think tonight's game, or tomorrow's game, 12:30 a.m., whatever you want to call it,
right.
I think it's going to go to three sets. I think you're going to see Venus really push Serena. And if she can come out kind of like she did against Coco in that second set particularly, volley well, her serve is on, and that psychological matchup kind of gets in there, I think this is going to be a fun one to watch.
Now, and the interesting thing is Venus hasn't been this far in a slam event since 08. I mean, the fact that they're here, it's amazing. So as far as the weekend goes and what you're up to, obviously you're traveling with the guys, but your KEZI crew, what can we expect to see on channel 709 in high def?
Yeah, you know, lots of high school action and recap from the Civil War game, and lots of Civil War and Ducks action and Beavers action all this weekend. It's a lot of hoops right now.
All right. Hey, always fun catching up. You travel safe, and enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk with you next week.
Sounds good.
Take care, KR.